Old America Weekend. Welcome back to Smith's Sabatino. Back in 1776, Carl, there was a story of civility that I want to share with you, and you may know it already based upon, I know, your love for history.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, the British Army used a heavy and very cumbersome weapon at that time called the Brown Bess.
Yes.
Remember that?
That's correct.
It was a smoothbore muscle loader and weighed about 14 pounds and was rarely accurate over 80 yards. It took a lot of practice in those days for a soldier to be able to fire the musket three times in 1 minute. Patrick Ferguson was a military officer in the British Army. He developed what came to be known as the Ferguson rifle. In 1776, it was a 7.5 pound weapon that he tested before George III, and George III said, "Hey, take that over to the colonies. You're going to need it over there," and or whatever he said, whatever
yes.
royalty says in those days. And that rifle, you could fire 6 shots a minute. And it was pretty accurate at about 300 yards. Now, here's the story that may have changed history. On September 7th, 1777, 3 days before the American defeat at the Battle of Brandywine Creek, Major Ferguson and his men were scouting ahead of the British lines when they heard a rider coming up, or a couple of riders actually, coming up a glen and a glade. There were two men, one with a large crooked hat, you know, one of those three-corner hats. Ferguson's first order was to shoot them down, but he then quickly changed his mind because he was a British officer and they had civility training. He was of the gentry. He wasn't, the peasant class where you just shot and killed. And not that all peasants do that, but
part of the flow and the thinking, yes.
And what he didn't find out until later, because he shouted for the two men to get down off their horses, and they didn't. They turned and ran. Ferguson found out a few days later that the man he had in his sights was George Washington.
Very interesting.
With that Ferguson rifle. He could, and the whole history of our country could have changed in that one moment.
Would have changed remarkably. That was I had heard of that story, not told, by the way, in specifically that way, but that was the moment in history, and it was actually a television broadcast. It was called Moments in History, and
that was a long time ago.
Yes, it was, and that was on that broadcast. Moments in History, and it changed the course of it would have changed the course of the war, clearly, because without George Washington's steadfast belief that we could win the war, and we have to remember the war went on for 7 years,
right?
Okay, and we look at that in terms of all the conflicts we've been in since, but 7 years on our soil, okay, the Civil War didn't last that long, okay, and had we lost him at that time. I think the outcome would have been remarkably different.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, there's going to be a guest that we'll have on our program someday who wrote a book on George Washington and
yes.
some of the interesting things that happened because he happened to be president, but also because he was a man of great integrity.
Yes.
And he also loved the idea of this country, not just the fact that he was a general, then he would be president, et cetera, but he loved the idea that America should be free free men.
And to a conversation which is in a book about Alexander Hamilton, a very heated discussion he had with Alexander Hamilton referenced that exact point. It was the idea of America, you see. It was the concept of this country. Okay, which leads me, by the way, what a segue into my observations from the middle of the crowd.
Isn't that interesting on this 4th of July weekend?
That's remarkable. On this 4th of July weekend, my observations from the middle of the crowd as I stand with you, and I always do, right there in the middle. We have lost our way in many respects, and these are my thoughts only, on the matter in discussion in this segment, and that's on civility, and for me it's more on the matter of politeness and the manner in which we conduct ourselves in public. A story very quickly. I'd gone to a restaurant with 3 younger people who I was attempting to hire And when the young ladies went to the table, I let them go first into the restaurant, and I went out to move the chair to so that the young lady could sit down. And I thought this one of the young men there was going to fall on the floor. He didn't know what the heck I was doing. I said, ladies first, and allow them to sit where they would be comfortable, and that's what you do. He had no idea of what to do. He was just standing there like he was one of the poles that was next to, adjacent to the table with flowers on it. And I found that to be striking because it for me, it was automatic.
Well, that was the era that we were both brought up. I remember my parents training me to make sure that I escorted a lady to the table if we had guests.
Yes.
That I would walk on the outside of the street or outside of the sidewalk so that the lady would be protected from anything from, you know, splashing from, you know, the old days is where it comes from.
Yes.
But there are all those sort of things.
But they're automatic to you.
Yeah.
And you and I have done it, and we've been in restaurants, and we do it automatic now to each other. And I will do that for men.
Well, you know, I saw that last night. I was having dinner at this restaurant, and I was alone, and I watched these three or four people come in. They were sitting at the bar, and there was only three chairs. A lady came in who was joining this group, and one of the men came over to me and says, could I take the chair from this table? And I said, of course. And he got the chair for the lady. But the other two guys there never even stood up.
Never stood up.
No, I was surprised. I was happy to see that at least there's some civility still.
Were they younger men?
No, they were older.
That's extraordinary. That's surprising. But, yeah. You know.
Well, older in the sense that probably in their 40s.
And again, to my observations from the crowd, come on, fellas, stand up. Hold that door. And women can do the same thing as well. And I've seen more women do it than men who will hold the door for you, okay, will say thank you for doing such.
Mm-hmm.
It is more a manner in which we conduct ourselves. Some may say it's a small point, but isn't it the small points that make the difference?
Oh, indeed. It's what makes us who we are.
Exactly.
I couldn't act any other way because that's the way I was trained. I remember my dad saying, when I first started dating as a teenager, he says, now make sure you walk the girl to the door.
Yes.
And make sure you go to the door when you pick her up for the date and say hello to her parents.
I dropped off a young lady that I was a friend of mine. How it happened, it doesn't matter. I wound up taking her home. And I was parked outside waiting for her, for the light to go on in the room. Okay. And she called me and said, why are you still outside my house? I said, because the light hasn't gone on yet. And I was waiting for the light to go on in the house. Okay. Automatically. That's what you did. I waited for that light. The light wasn't going on. And I was waiting there for that light to go on. She called me on the cell phone. Why are you waiting outside? Because the light hasn't gone on. Simple point.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story of my grandfather. Apparently, never knew what time his daughters and sons got home from their dates, and he wanted to know. He'd ask the next day, and they'd all say, "Oh, we got in early. You were sleeping."
Of course.
So one time, apparently, my grandfather, who had a lot of beer bottles and milk bottles and stuff down in the basement, brought them all upstairs and placed them strategically near the front doorway and the stairway because the kids never turned on the light. They could find their way. So until they started clanking the bottles, and my grandfather apparently was roaring in laughter.
I love it.
He found out what time they got home.
Well, my observation from the middle of the crowd, simply put, to use the term of in this particular segment, civility, and there are things that we should do and should continue to do. And I don't know why we don't, but we should. Pay attention, nice young men. That's the way we live, and we live properly in this world, in my opinion.
It's a matter of training. It's a matter of culture,
yes.
Too. Our culture accepts and expects that kind of behavior. But you go overseas, I would say particularly to the third world countries and to the Middle East as well as the Far East, there's not as much courtesy with the exception of Japan.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It is probably the most courteous country I've ever been in.
Yeah.
They are, it's remarkable how they, and they do bow. They mm-hmm. do. They gently bow as they hold the door and so on. There's a reverence, particularly if you're older, by the way. We fall into that category. Thank you very much. And they give us the due reverence, which other countries simply don't do. I don't know. My thoughts, my observations from the middle of the crowd, and an interesting story, by the way, about the moment that saved, could very well have saved this country.
Yeah, the Ferguson rifle.
The Ferguson rifle.
You know, I know we're going to break here quickly, but it reminded me of some of the Paul Harvey stuff when he used to say, and now the rest of the story.
The rest of the story. You know? And there it is.
Nice to know.
Call Sabatino, Smith and Sabatino on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. Stay with us.
America Weekend. Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This second baseman was a 1991 AL Rookie of the Year. Despite being a four-time World Series champion, he suddenly forgot how to throw the ball to first base.
Throwing it into the stands, and ironically enough, the ball hit Keith Olbermann's mother right between the eyes.
So where is Chuck Knobloch now? Chuck gave up on baseball in 2002 and made headlines in 2010 when he pled guilty to misdemeanor assault charges for choking his wife. He was mentioned in the Mitchell Report and eventually admitted to using HGH despite failing to respond to an invitation from Congress for a deposition. I wonder what Keith thinks about that.
My theory is that Mr. Knobloch got their invitation, wrote a letter back, and then tried to throw it into a nearby mailbox and instead hit my mother.
Very possible, Keith. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
The Movie Man. 6-second review starts now.
Rude, crude, socially unacceptable, and stupidly funny. That Ted is one jacked up teddy bear. But man.
6-second reviews are brought to you by summer's most unapologetic new comedy, Trainwreck, starring Amy Schumer, in theaters July 17th.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Taking a ride along the water's edge isn't limited to bikers who live near the ocean.
Around home, we ride the St. Croix River, and a beautiful place to be in Minnesota. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous riding along the river. We have a good time.
Riding the St. Croix. Today on American Biker Minute.
The Movie Man 6-second DVD review starts now.
A riveting crime series about a rich, murderous man with ice in his veins. The Jinx is a real-life killer thriller. I'm in.
6-second reviews are brought to you by summer's most unapologetic new comedy, Trainwreck, starring Amy Schumer, in theaters July 17th.
Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. Kick it back, let it happen.
Oh, on the river? We like to go to Stillwater, Minnesota, into Wisconsin, and ride the river down Prescott, all the way down Maiden Rock, down to Lake Nelson, and then you can shoot back up the Minnesota side or stay on the Wisconsin side. It's gorgeous along the river.
The St. Croix River marks the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
We have a good time.
American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.